This time on Weather Brains. Evening thunderstorms catch J.B. Elliott's attention.
I was really surprised at these, for one thing, moving almost due west, and because there were so many of them.
Warnings about the danger of lightning.
Just because one lightning strike is, 3 miles away doesn't mean the next one will be.
James Spann remembers the time he and JB missed being hit by lightning by about 20 feet.
Boy, we went outside back in 1995 and boom, it was close. I mean, it was real close.
It was trial by fire for James, who recalls his start in Birmingham television weather.
I was scared to death. I was 23 years old, and they had just hired me as the weeknight weather anchor for the NBC station in Birmingham.
Just how bad is our current heat wave? Not as tough as you may think.
Let me tell you, this pales in comparison to the summer of 1980.
And Bill Murray visits the National Hurricane Center.
Frank Lepore, who's the public affairs officer, gave us about an hour and 15-minute tour of the entire facility. It was just fabulous.
That and much more coming up. Hello and welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about the weather, put together by a bunch of weather geeks, of which I'm one, David Black. Hello, and thank you for being with us. And a greeting as well this time to James Spann, lead meteorologist with ABC 3340 Birmingham, and J.B. Elliott with us as well. James, how are you?
I'm perspiring.
I know the feeling.
Actually, in this kind of weather, I think you sweat, don't you, J.B.?
You sweat in the morning.
I am shivering. You're got it too cold in my office, so we just turned the thermostat up 4 degrees.
All you need to do is just step outside in central Alabama, and you won't be shivering anymore. Tell you what, we are recording this podcast on a Monday evening, and the radar is pretty active to the south of Birmingham, guys.
Figuring out these summer thunderstorms is just a great challenge, David. That's what I was talking about before the show started. It is one of the great mysteries of life. You typically get this random convection on a summer afternoon and evening when it's so hot. And I almost think it's pointless trying to figure out who's going to get rain and where. Don't you agree, JB?
Yeah, just about. You can just about broad brush it all summer. Sure can. I was really surprised at these tonight. For one thing, moving almost due west, and because there were so many of them. And they actually lined up. And I see a radar report now from Maxwell Doppler that estimated 2.20 inches in 1 hour.
Goodness.
In northeast Russell County.
I want to tell you something. About an hour or so before we began recording this podcast, I'm out in front of my Shelby County home with my 5-pound killer attack poodle, taking in the conclusion of the day, just enjoying the winding down and cooling down. And I hear the distinct rumble of thunder only a few miles, less than 5 miles, I'd say, to the west. And I immediately start thinking of a couple of posts I remember seeing on the ABC 3340 weather blog. Brian Peters, I think, has put some out. Bill Murray, James, you and JB too as well. The blog posts about the hazards of being outside during even a typical summertime thunderstorm because of the danger of lightning. I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I'm remembering that. But I'm still out there enjoying the conclusion of the day. And not a minute later, zap, cloud to ground stroke, less than a mile off to the west of where I'm standing in front of my home. The 5-pound killer attack poodle and I promptly went back inside the house at that point. And I think the message there is just kind of a reminder that I think we all just kind of become desensitized to typical thunderstorms and think just no big deal. But really, it just only takes one mistake to stay out in one, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, yes. JB states it very well. That's the one thing he has fear of. Isn't that right, JB?
Lightning? That's the most fearsome thing in weather to me is lightning.
In fact, JB and I almost lost our life during Hurricane Opal. And, typically in tropical systems, you don't see a lot of lightning and thunder. But, boy, we went outside back in 1995, and boom, it was close. I mean, it was real close.
Well, just for review, what is the general safety rule that you need to keep in mind? Is it a certain amount of time that you hear thunder off in the distance? Or what's the simple way people need to keep that in mind?
Well, I hear all these different rules and this and that. Here's my rule. When you hear thunder, get inside. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I think lightning safety is not complicated. And, You know, I've heard this 30-30 rule. I guess that's okay, but what I teach kids, when you hear thunder, go inside. Even if the rain shaft is 10 miles away, that doesn't mean the lightning is 10 miles away. And then some people say, well, you're supposed to count the seconds between the lightning and the thunder and multiply it. Well, forget that. Just because one lightning strike is, you know, 3 miles away doesn't mean the next one will be. So what I teach kids, and adults ought to latch onto this too, is when you hear thunder, go inside. When the thunder stops, you can go back outside. And on our weatherparty.com site, David, one of the stories in the front page submitted by one of our readers is pretty interesting. A lightning strike killed an 11-year-old boy this past weekend. This was down in the community of Alberta, which is in Baldwin County, not too far from the Gulf Coast. But apparently he was struck by lightning that traveled up a water hose as he was feeding animals outside his home.
My goodness.
And he was pronounced dead Sunday evening at South Baldwin Medical Center down in Foley. And according to the coroner, Huey Mack, in this article, the coroner said there was just one little cloud up there, and the sun was shining at the time. And it was a typical, you know, pop-up summer storm that's not severe by classic definition. So that's just another reminder of how tragic this is. And I would think that in that case, you know, there would have been thunder around there before that happened.
Well, I guess the rule there, or the lesson there, is even if it seems to be just a small, lighter grade thunder shower, the danger's really no less.
Oh, yeah. And these summer storms on these hot afternoons produce just hundreds and hundreds of ground strokes. In fact, even as we're talking on this show, I'm watching the radar lighting up on this lightning detection network, and it's just amazing. So, you know, an 11-year-old boy dying is just horrible. And we don't want to hear any more stories like that. But it never fails. Every summer, most all of the deaths, weather-related in the deep south and the southeastern U.S., are related to lightning strikes.
I would like
to. And there was a case over the weekend where four people were injured by lightning on the grounds of the Biltmore Estate in Asheville, where James was vacationing recently. And last summer, I was driving east on Deerfoot Parkway in the northeast part of Jefferson County, and a huge bolt of lightning struck out of the blue. The sun was shining about a mile in front of our car, and I was just 45 seconds from home, and I immediately checked the radar, and that lightning bolt came out of a thunderstorm 8 miles away, and it probably arced out of the top of the thunderstorm. And a few years ago in Colorado, there was a case where a bicycler was found dead high up in the mountains of Colorado. They went back and checked all of the lightning detection equipment, and the only thing they could determine was that a lightning bolt arced out of the top of a thunderstorm and traveled 25 miles over a ridge and hit him.
That's amazing. What's the closest you guys have ever been to a lightning strike, JB?
The closest I've ever been was sitting in a doctor's office in Bessemer in the 1950s, and lightning struck. I was sitting in the corner of the waiting room. The lightning struck the corner of the roof, went down a steel frame about 6 inches behind my spinal cord, and dug a hole in the ground just outside the building. Of course, I was safe because it was well protected from lightning, but the closest I've been that really scared the living daylights out of me was that night James and I came out of Channel 6 during the night of Hurricane Opal, and the lightning struck about 20 feet away just as we stepped out the back door. I know I cleared the ground, and I think James, it scared him a bit.
What was that sound like, James? I'll bet you remember it.
It was loud, I'll tell you that. And
probably enough to blow your ears out, I would think.
It was pretty intense. So we
it will get rid of airwax, that's for sure.
Yeah, we immediately went back inside. It wasn't worth going back out there in that. And again, you know, tropical systems rarely have that much lightning. We just, you know, that goes to show you never know.
Well, speaking of tropical systems, seems like the tropics are picking up a little bit. Want to tell us about what's going on in the tropics?
I guess it's about time, David. You know, typically the peak of the season is August and September and the first half of October. And I'll say this, you know, so many people over the last 2 years that they're just thinking, you know, hurricane. And sure, I do think we are in an oscillation phase where it's going to stay active for a number of years. But we're not going to have years like last year very often. That might be a once-in-a-lifetime event. I'm not so sure. Certainly in my lifetime, we'll see another season with that many storms. And a lot of people are just thinking because we haven't had a named storm this year through, well, we've had one. that it's been kind of quiet, that this whole thing's a bust. The season's just now cranking up. I mean, we're getting to the good part, and we're starting to see the wave train really pick up. A really nice wave came off the coast of Africa this morning, and that's what you have to watch. We've got an old front in the Atlantic. In one system, in my opinion, it is a tropical storm. I know that they didn't give the thing a name, but it really wound up, and it's taken off into the North Atlantic now. And then another one that's east of the Carolinas, and that's an interesting feature there. There's two schools of thought. One, it comes into the United States coast as a tropical storm. The other, it sits out there stationary, is picked up by a trough and taken out to sea. But that could become Tropical Storm Beryl within the next 24 hours here, and we'll have to watch that. So I think the season is beginning, and I do think, David, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we'll really have a good clue if this will be a season when we're going to see the storms recurving up toward the Gulf Coast like last year, if they curve up the Atlantic coast, or if they stay out in the open Atlantic. I think we'll have a really good clue in the next few weeks of how it's going to go.
And as Dr. William Gray, the very well-known University of Colorado researcher, told us on our Weather Brains podcast a few weeks back, he would not be at all surprised to see some storms, I believe, curving up the Atlantic coast. He really seemed to think those areas may be in for it sooner or later. And well, he too yeah, said we were in for a fairly active season again this year.
This is a matter of statistics. You know, we have had incredible activity on the Gulf Coast the last 2 years in a row. And for us to have 3 years like that, the odds are pretty small. And we can go for very long periods of time without big hurricanes. I remember when I started in the television business, my first week in television in Birmingham was September of 1979, the week of a storm called Hurricane Frederick that hit the central Gulf Coast. And, you know, my first week at work was just intense with that big hurricane. And, you know, we didn't have another one until Opal in 1995, 15 years without one on the central Gulf Coast. So that's an example of you can go a long time without them. So we'll see.
Frederick was trial by fire for you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You hadn't been around long.
You know, I was scared to death. I was 23 years old, and they had just hired me as the weeknight weather anchor for the NBC station in Birmingham. You know, that was an amazing thing. I certainly was not qualified to be in a market this big at the age of 23 as the main weather guy. And then that was fearful enough. And then this big hurricane blew up, and they sent me down there to Mobile to cover the storm. And this was back before satellite trucks, and back then you used telephones and anything else you had. And we stayed at a school that was used as an evacuation center, Azalea Mills School in the northern part of Mobile. Oddly enough, we did not go to the coast, just, you know, trying to get the people aspect of the thing. And but I survived the week, and I guess I've survived my career so far. That was a long time ago.
J.B. Elliott, what's your take on the tropics? You agree with James' assessment, or you have any thoughts to share?
I agree with him. I don't have anything different to say.
We just need something to bring some rain up here, don't we, to kind of get us a little wet?
Sure do. And at this moment, they're beginning to blossom over West Jefferson County and Walker County.
Well.
Yes, it's kind of fun watching the radar while this thing's going on. And I'll say this, David, I guess the big story in weather around the country is the heat. And J.B., how hot did it get in South Dakota? I've heard conflicting reports on that. What was the deal up there this weekend?
South Dakota cooled off a bit from what they had over the weekend. Now, over the weekend, they had one temperature at an official co-op weather station of 120, which would make that the hottest weather of all time in South Dakota, even going back to the Dust Bowl years in the 1930s. Some of the highs I've noticed up that way today, I don't see any right now in South Dakota that I had listed, but in Oklahoma, it was around 108 in some places. Wichita had 108. Wichita Falls, 108, 107 in Phoenix, 105 in Dallas, Waco, Shreveport, Rapid City, and Oklahoma City. So there's a 105 in Rapid City.
I noticed, too, today Bullhead City, Arizona, at one point was 108, and that's really not as hot as they have can sometimes get, but really that wasn't all that much warmer than some places here in the Deep South.
Yeah, Bullhead City is on near the banks of the Colorado River, the lower Colorado, and they get blistering hot. Bullhead City and Parker and Lake Havasu City, they all compete sometimes for the hottest in the nation.
Do people get used to living in that, I wonder?
Some folks just love that kind of heat, but I do not.
Let's send JB out to Bullhead City for 5 years and have him report on that.
WeatherBrain's special correspondent, JB Elliott from Bullhead City, Arizona. That's interesting.
JB will be out there in his tank top and Bermuda shorts, you know. That's awesome.
You'll be a popular guy, I'm sure. Speaking of special correspondents, we've got one of another type, another special correspondent in the WeatherBrains crew, and that is Bill Murray. If you have been watching the ABC 3340 weather blog the past day or so, you've seen some posts from Bill's trip to South Florida, a business trip in which he managed to mix in a visit to the National Hurricane Center. And James, we know Max Mayfield, the director of that place, don't we?
Hey, he's been on our podcast here before.
Sure has.
Great guy.
Bill was able to get a what sounds like a pretty impressive tour, and we want him to tell us all about it. But there's just one problem. Bill is in the air as we record this podcast, returning from a business trip to Colorado. Nonetheless, I managed to catch up with Mr. Murray a little earlier today on the phone to get just a few little details about his trip to the National Hurricane Center and visit with Max Mayfield. How'd you wind up in South Florida at the NHC anyway, Bill?
Well, we were going there for a Holiday Inn Hurricane Preparedness Conference. We have several hotels that are in the coastal zone, so we had a meeting planned there on Thursday, and I'd met Max back in 2002, and we decided it would be a good time to call him up and see if we could get a tour. You can't get tours normally during the summer. It was a specially arranged thing. Generally, public tours are only done January through April, so it was a real treat.
A WeatherBrains payoff?
Yes, it did. There's no question, because he remembered that. And it was funny, during the time that, when we were having lunch, he said, that he thought that WeatherBrains was an important way to get the message out, about preparedness and hurricane safety and things like that. So he viewed it as a special opportunity, and we really viewed it as a special opportunity.
Well, I know that you're going to put together some pieces on what you got to see and tour and the people, but can you give me just a little sneak preview that folks can know will be coming ahead?
Yeah, well, with Frank Lepore, who's the public affairs officer, gave us about an hour and 15-minute tour of the entire facility. It was just fabulous, and I recorded that entire tour, so we'll be able to take out parts of it because it is fascinating information that I think our listeners will really, really enjoy hearing.
We're looking forward to it.
Great.
Have a safe trip back, okay?
Thanks, David.
Adios. That was Bill Murray, who we caught up with at the Denver airport. He will be giving us a full report on his trip to NHC in future WeatherBrains podcasts. Guys, I've never been to NHC. I'd love to do that tour. I'm green with envy.
Yeah, I think the last time I was at the National Hurricane Center, David, was way back in 1985. So it's been a long time, and I'm sure things have changed a lot. Back in the mid-80s, I worked at Channel 4 in Dallas, KDFW Television. Back then, it was the CBS affiliate. And there was a hurricane called Hurricane Gloria that was a major storm threatening the East Coast. And I guess that's back when TV stations had money to burn. They put me on a Learjet. The news director called me up at noon. I was sitting in my house in Plano, Texas, at noon, and he said I was doing the 5 o'clock weather at the National Hurricane Center in Miami.
Wow.
And, I said, Wendell, are you kidding me? And I thought it was joking. And he said, no, I've got a Learjet waiting at the Addison Airport. So I drove over there, and there was a Learjet waiting. And by golly, we got off that plane at 4:30, and we were on the air at 5 o'clock from the Hurricane Center. Neil Frank was the head of the facility back then, and I think it's in the same place. They just kind of redesigned it and rebuilt the whole thing. This was way before Andrew. Again, this was in 1985, but I would love to go back sometime and meet those guys in person and just take a look around. You know, as I remember from 85, it's just a Weather Service office. If you've been to a National Weather Service office, it kind of looks like that, but obviously the type of work and the people, they're pretty special that are working down there.
What they do there is pretty fascinating. And speaking of Max Mayfield, Bill Murray did put some comments on the ABC 3340 blog earlier before he took off on his business trip. He was saying that Mr. Mayfield scoffs at people who say the above normal forecast for hurricanes this year is already a bust. That's exactly what you were saying a few minutes ago, James. Mayfield says that sea surface temperatures are well above normal and shear levels are well below normal. It's not that unusual that we are only through the first letter of the alphabet when we were through F by this time a year ago. I'm quoting, by the way, from Bill's post on the blog. Again, quoting Bill, he says, referring to Mr. Mayfield, that he will not answer any more questions about hurricanes and global warming. He says that there is no way to make a correlation between the number of Category 4 and 5 hurricanes and man-made global warming. There is simply not enough data. Heard that before.
I wonder how long it's going to take him to get fired for saying that by some bonehead politician.
Well, I was just going to say, Max Mayfield has, I would think, in some ways, a pretty unenviable position. He's a meteorologist. He's not a politician. He's a science, person of science, and he has to cross that bridge. He has to interconnect with the meteorological community, but he has to interconnect and answer to the political community, and I don't think that's a very easy job. I'd put that on par with you guys trying to forecast exact locations of summertime thunderstorms.
Oh, absolutely. I believe Tom Brokaw was supposed to do a special on global warming tonight, but I did not see it.
Let me say this. I would love to have an operational meteorologist on this show. If one's listening, and a lot of people listen to this show, that is a big believer in man-made global warming, give us an email and we'll put you on here. I would love to hear the opposing viewpoint. And now I'm not talking about researchers whose grant money depends on global warming research. You know, forget that. There's a conflict of interest. I'm talking about an operational guy like what we do that's a big believer in man-made global warming. I can't find one, David. I mean, everybody we've had on this show is, you know, says that this is just lunacy. But
well,
I'd love to give equal time, but we just can't find anybody.
We mentioned in a previous Weather Brains podcast that we'd really like to have Al Gore, if it were ever possible, to get him on this show, and I would love that. I would like for us to be able to present all the different sides, and I am hoping that our podcast listeners don't think that we are really trying to take one side. You know, we've had a lot of people who hotly contest man-made global warming's impact on the Earth. That's very obvious. I'd be wide open to having opposing views. I think what's concerned us, though, is that so much of the mainstream news media coverage today has not presented both sides in this issue. So if there's a chance of getting somebody like you say, James, I'd love to see Al Gore get on this show with us.
Yeah.
I don't know if
that'll
happen, but it would be great if it could.
People say that, you know, you guys are joking. I think he ought to come on the show. I would love to have
absolutely.
Fun here. And I think that people that know David Black know that he's a great journalist and he's not going to ambush anybody, nor would anybody on this show. I would love to have him on here, and maybe we can talk to somebody that's got some connections and give the other side of the story some equal time here. So that'd be great.
Yeah, let's aim for it. Well, maybe we can try. And that subject's going to come up again and again because there is so much exposure to it. Speaking of something you said, James, about all the folks who listen to this show, I'd kind of like to do just a real informal podcast listener survey. And if folks who are listening to us wouldn't mind, just pop a quick email to us and tell us maybe your name and where you're listening from. I think it would be fun just to kind of get a sampling and find out where we've got people listening. Because we've got an email from the East Coast, from the Central Plains in the U.S. I'd like to know where folks are tuning us in from. I guess they could be anywhere.
Great idea. I love that.
I had one from California, and I'd love to know if somebody's listening to us abroad. I mean, podcasting is just exploding, and we've been doing this. What show is this, 24, 5?
I'm not sure exactly. We started at the beginning of the year, so we've got a few under our belt. And
yeah, we've got to be
I'm curious, too, if anybody's hung in there with us the whole time. That's a pretty tough challenge to do, but maybe somebody here or there has.
We ought to send somebody some money for that. Maybe we take some of Brian Peters' government retirement money he gets and send it over there.
I want to thank our wives for being our regular listeners to this.
I want to mention one point before we move on here, and we've got to wrap up in a few minutes. Get back to this heat wave thing. I've actually had some people that have sent notes telling me that, you know, this heat wave is the worst heat wave of all time. And no, it's not. I mean, it's not even in the same league as some of the great heat waves. The last one that we've had in my lifetime was in 1980. And in Birmingham that year, we peaked at 106 degrees. And JB, I think we exceeded 100 degrees for, what, 7 days in a row?
Six or seven.
And in Dallas, David, Dallas in the summer of 1980, they exceeded 100 degrees for 69 consecutive days between June the 23rd and September the 6th. and they reached their all-time high on June the 26th and June the 27th with 113. And in Wichita Falls, they hit 119 degrees.
And, so it could be worse.
Yeah, let me tell you, this pales in comparison to the summer of 1980. And then you go back to some of the summers in the 30s, and even, JB, I think Birmingham's all-time record high was, what year was that?
1930, late July.
Yeah, 1930, and the state's hottest ever was 112. That was in September of 1925, so we're not close to some record heat wave here. The problem we've had is the fact that we've had temperatures below normal for the last 5 years. We're just not used to it. We were way overdue for a hot summer, and it's just bound to happen. And quite frankly, we're way overdue for a cold winter, and that's going to happen 1 year soon. That's going to freak everybody out, too. So everything balances it out.
We had a drought in 1952 and again in 1954, just 2 years apart, with some very high temperatures. And during those two situations, there were so many forest fires around the state that visibility was reduced over a large part of the state, at sometimes, to a pall of smoke.
Well, we've kind of been spoiled. We haven't really had it that tough, it seems to me, lately. So when it gets hot like it is now, people are really having a hard time dealing with it. So maybe that's part of the picture. James, the 1980 heat wave that you were mentioning, you talked about this on a podcast just a week or two back. That's the one, is it not, where it was kind of a novelty at first, but then it really got intense. People started dying, and it quickly became a lot more serious.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, we were, you know, having fun. I remember doing the weather in a meat locker of a supermarket, wearing some big Russian hat and a big coat, you know, just kind of making fun of it. But I don't know if we've got a death toll on this thing, but the agricultural damage estimates in the U.S. alone was $44 billion, and that's 1980 dollars. And then your loss of life, I've heard numbers anywhere from 1,200 to 10,000 in there. That's a serious heat wave right there. So, yeah. You know, at some point you got to move past being funny and understand this is a serious disaster. In fact, it was one of the most devastating natural disasters in terms of deaths and destruction in U.S. history. So,
not to mention the price it can take in other fields, agriculture, etc. So,
and the other thing that people forget that year on the northern rim of the a ring of fire on the northern tip of that heat bubble, we had a bunch of these derechos that formed up there, and we had one on the day after the 4th, the 5th of July, that raced from Nebraska to Virginia. I mean, I remember that thing. It just held in there for about 15 hours. It killed 6 people and injured 70. And that's another, you know, side effect of that whole weather pattern there. So that was a wild summer.
Well, many things.
On vacation during that heat wave, camping at Duck Creek, Utah, 9,200 feet, I believe, was the elevation. And when we broke camp, we had to scrape ice off the windshield. And 2 days later, we were driving through Dallas in some of that most intense heat. And during that heat wave, by the way, Interstate 40 buckled across parts of Arkansas, and they encouraged motorists to use only one lane.
JB, I've got a request.
Speak.
When you write your book, Scattered Brains and Scattered Showers, will you include some segments on your travels out west?
Yeah.
You have a publication date yet?
Next week.
Oh, outstanding. Can I get an autograph?
I haven't started on it yet, but I'm determined to do it.
I just hope he mentions this in the book, David.
Well, I don't know. It'd be nice, but, you know, we can't assume anything.
You and Brian on the covers and...
Great.
Bill Murray, we'll have everybody in there. Your little puppy.
All right.
And everything. We'll write about everything.
Okay. I thought I'd pass along one little news article that kind of caught my eye. This is from the past week. A federal administrative law judge has stopped the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, from flying its high-altitude jet into hurricanes until the agency negotiates with a union representing meteorologists, engineers, and technicians. Richard Pearson is an administrative law judge with the Federal Labor Relations Authority. Mr. Pearson found that the NOAA Aircraft Operations Center in Tampa had wrongfully bypassed the National Weather Service Employees Organization in forming a team to study proposals for flying a Gulfstream jet into and near the centers of hurricanes as safely as possible. NOAA officials contended that they were not changing the conditions of employment for the jet's civilian crews, but Pearson said the high speed and altitude of the jet, the hazards of flying close to a storm, storm's inner core, and the inability of flight instruments to detect all hazards were quantitatively and qualitatively different from those the employees were accustomed to and required them to face new and more complex safety hazards.
That is absolutely ridiculous. You just ruined that wonderful meal we had down at the Alabama Power Company headquarters today.
I just report the stuff. I didn't make it up.
That sounds like somebody made that up. That's so ridiculous. But if you report it, David, I'll believe it.
Did not make it up. You guys had a good visit with the folks at Alabama Power, I understand.
Yes, it was one of the best meals I've had in 25 years.
I thought that was very nice. Charles McCrary, who's the CEO, and a lot of the executives and the public relations folks just brought us down to... I have not been down to that facility in probably a year. I used to go pretty often, but they showed us their new media center, which is pretty fascinating. Boy, that thing's high-tech. I mean, back in the old days, David, back when we were doing weather together, you know, you'd go down there with a live shot and just get somebody on the air as best you can. But now they've got this full setup for multiple TV stations, and you just plug in mics. Everything's all in there. They got the TV lights and the big screen and operations room in the background. It's really
high-tech.
Really nice. Yeah, very nice.
Sounds nice.
I would love to live in that place.
Yeah, they had the 3340 website up one of those big screens. That was great.
How's the weather party doing?
Weather party's doing great. Again, our latest web project is called weatherparty.com, and it's one of those Web 2.0 things where you basically determine what goes in a front page. You know, we don't have anything to do with it. Anybody can submit a link, and then you vote for the links, and the top vote-getters get published up on the front page. It's kind of a citizen journalism thing, but it involves just weather. It's all about weather, and it was buzzing this morning with a tsunami thing. I noticed the death toll at Java Island is up to 110 from that big tsunami this morning. So that's the kind of stuff you'll get first over there, and it's pretty fascinating. There's some great articles. I mean, there's probably hundreds on there now, but if you get a chance, check it out. It's weatherparty.com. And again,
I've got to register.
Yeah, register and submit articles. Got a cool weather link. You know, I have people send you these cool links by instant message or send it by email. Put it on Weather Party and the whole world can see it. It's pretty cool.
Weatherparty.com. Sounds cool. All right, guys. A reminder that the opinions expressed on Weather Brains are strictly those of the speaker and are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. If you'd like to contact us, a couple of ways you can do it. On the telephone, if you'd like to leave voicemail, our number is 206-339-5482. That's 206-339-5482. Our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. And as we said a few minutes ago, we'd love to hear from you just to know where you're listening from. If you'll shoot your name and location to us, we'd love to find out. Thank you, guys. James and JB, keep out of trouble, okay?
We'll try.
Pleasure.
All right, be good. For James Spann and JB Elliott, I'm David Black. We thank you for listening and hope you'll be able to join us for the next edition of Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006, all rights reserved. Adios. Gracias, guys.
Have a good evening.
You're a jewel, David. What would we do without him, James?
And he the man. He the best.
He the man, that's right.
Who paid you to say that?
Hey.